Okay, good evening. It's a pleasure to be able to come back here to Beit Shemesh to give another lecture on the wonderful mitzvah of Shatnez. Let's hear Shatnez. Not that Shatnez is any less important than any other mitzvah of the Torah, but usually when we hear classes about Yiddishkeit, we hear about Shabbos, Kashrus, things that are Yisodei Amunah. Unfortunately, Shatnez doesn't make the top 10. Not that it's any less important, but usually because people don't know enough information about it, what's going on in today's textile place, and therefore we're going to give a lecture today. We're going to have three parts. The first part we'll discuss the different types of materials, textile materials that will be encountered in the marketplace. We'll have some of the basic laws of Shatnez. The next part we'll have a cloth making demonstration. And then the third part, we'll have an actual demonstration of the show and tell and practical aids is how to purchase and take care of our clothing. There's a lot of information to give over, so please don't slow me down. At the end, we'll have time for everything. At the end of the whole lecture tonight, we'll have some time to do some on-the-spot checking also. Here's the portable Shatnez lamp, and we'll be able to do some checking as well. Okay, so without further ado, the wonderful mitzvah of Shatnez. Two places in the Torah, it discusses the forbidden combination called klayim. You're not allowed to have forbidden mixtures. The first type is called klai zroim. You're not allowed to mix different types of seeds. There are three types of forbidden mixtures of seeds. The first type is you're not allowed to take a tree. Let's say it's a graft a tree. If you have an apple tree, you cut off a branch from the apple tree. You attach it to an orange tree. If a goy does the action of the combination of the actual grafting, the fruit that's a result of the mixture is permissible b'achila. You're allowed to eat it. But you're not allowed to do the action itself of grafting the tree. That's type one of, I'll call it 1A, of klai zroim. The second type is klai kerem. You're not allowed to mix different types of wheat in a vineyard or vice versa. That's the second type. You're not allowed to have two different species. The third type of klai zroim, mixing seeds, is if you have a handful of assorted seeds, you get them all together, all mixed up. You walk in the field and you just throw them down on the ground and it just grows in a haphazard pattern. That'll be an isser of klayim. If you have a garden, you have to have a row of cucumbers, move over a little space and you have a row of tomatoes. If you do berubuvia, if it's all mixed up, that's another isser of klay zroim. That's the first type. The second type of forbidden mixture is called klay behema. You're not allowed to mix different types of animals. Two types. The first one is lo sachrosh shor v'chamo yachtov. You can't pull a wagon or a plow with two different species. Let's say a horse and a donkey. You won't be able to pull them together. That's one type. The second type is you're not allowed to crossbreed two different types of species as well. All right, that's the second type. Now, that might not sound so practical. However, I once took my kids on Chol Hamoed Sukkos here in Israel. We went on an amusement park, a luna park here in Israel. So the kids were waiting, they wanted to go on the pony rides. Who doesn't like pony rides? So I was sitting there waiting on my turn, and I see there's a little pony. Attached with a string is a donkey. Attached with another string is another pony, and another donkey, and another pony, and another donkey. And I'm looking and I say, the paisai isn't the raisa to go on to the pony rides over here. Why? Because they're all attached. It's klai behema. Mamashin isn't the raisa. All right, so people say, well, what are you talking about? Because it's one of the mitzvahs. If you don't think about it, it happens all the time. I gave this lecture in a shul a couple of years ago. After the shiur, one of the avrechim, he came over to me and he said, I'll tell you another story. He said in his class, his kid came home from cheder, and the Rebbe wanted to teach them a little bit about botany. So they had a little cup, and in the cup they took a little thing, they put it next to the windowsill. He put one seed over here, another seed over here, and then every day they would come into class and they'd water the seeds, and they would watch it grow together. And his kid came home and told this, Agav to his father. He said, in a cup, there's no separation. Now there can be two different seeds. The Rebbe, instead of teaching them, he was over under the Reisa of Klai Zroyim, literally in the classroom, okay? Because this is the type of mitzvah that people just, we don't encounter it every single day. We don't think about it. Now it comes to our mitzvah of Shatnez, and it's called Klai Begodim. You're not allowed to mix different types of garments. And the Torah says, Ube Pashas Kedoshim, Yud Tes, and it says, Ubeged Klayim Shatnez, this forbidden combination called Klayim, which is called Shatnez, Lo yale alecha. It should not come upon the body. Well, what is it? So we don't, oh, at this point, we have to have a little bit of patience till we come to the end of the Torah in Parshas Ki Tetzeh, where we have a second pasuk. And then the Torah says, Lo silbash shatnez. Don't wear this thing called shatnez. What is it? And here the Torah elaborates, and it says, Tzemer upishtim yachtav. Wool and linen together. This is known in the principle as Divrei Torah aniyim b'mokam echad, ashirim b'mokam acher. The Divrei Torah are poor in one place, and they're enriched in the other place. So why does the Torah give over like that? So the answer is because that's the way life is. First, we're young, we have certain types of knowledge, and we have questions. I don't understand, what's going on? I wait a little bit, keep learning, and you get, oh, now I have another detail. Ah, now you have another detail. Slowly, the picture starts emerging. That is the way that life is, and that's the way the Torah works also. So the Torah in Parshas Ki Tetzeh goes back and elaborate. That word shat is that in Parshas Kedoshim, and we didn't know what it was, but now it tells us it's wool and linen together. What is wool and linen? So comes along the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch and defines for us what we're talking about. Wool is wool that comes from a sheep or a lamb source. Now why do we have to know that? Because there are many wool producing animals. We have, for example, this cashmere or mohair that comes from goats. A minotaur that's permissible together with linen. We have alpaca from camels. We have angora from rabbits. All those types are permissible together with the linen. However, one time I had a chassan who brought me his 100% cashmere wool coat. I looked at the price tag, it said on it $2,300. Pretty expensive. So what happens is the companies often cut corners, and instead of writing on the label, they write, cashmere with wool, but it's really wool with a little cashmere thrown in there. All right, so and it's almost vadai. It's so expensive, they're almost never going to use 100%. And even if they do, that doesn't include any of the internal components. So even if it says cashmere or mohair, one of these other things, we have to assume there's going to be the cheaper sheep wool, and we're going to have to inspect it anyways. When the Torah says you're not allowed to have pishtim, so the flax plant produces linen threads. So underneath the green, they peel off the bark. Underneath, you have a straw-like material. And from there, we're going to get our linen threads. Now, besides the linen or flax, which will be forbidden with, together with wool, there's another three species which are very similar in nature, and those are be permissible together with wool. Those are called jute or hemp. The backs of carpets are usually made out of jute, or sometimes you go to the health food store, you see the rice bags or the wheat sacks or something. Okay, it's a heavy burlap type of material, something that looks like that. That's what Mordechai was wearing, a sock of afer. This rough stuff against the body. Okay, that's usually it's called in Shulchan Aruch called yuta or jute. All right, so that's permissible together with wool. And then there's something. The other one is called hemp. The hemp is a plant source. It also comes from the stalk. The threads come from the stalk. It's illegal to grow in many countries because that's where the marijuana plant comes from. Okay? Until Jesse Ventura in Minnesota made it mutter, and they said it was allowed. All right, so, but still in a lot of places it's illegal. Okay, so, but you could have a hemp together with wool, that's okay. Jute together with wool is fine, but it's usually a heavy type of material. They don't often blend those things together. And the third type of, besides the linen, there's the jute, there's the hemp, there's something called Chinese linen, which is known as rami, R-A-M-I-E, Chinese rami. In China, the word rami and linen is interchangeable. So if you have a cotton and rami sweater, like somebody brought me to the lab today, they said, does this really need checking? So I said, yes, cotton and rami is Chinese linen. So we have to hear the word rami, define it in our heads, that means linen. Once there's linen, we have to make sure that there's no wool. But theoretically, the only thing that'll be usser is the wool from the sheep or the lamb together with the linen or flax. Those two things together are usser. When that pasuk said that you're not allowed to have shatnez on your body, the pasuk in Kedoshim, it said, lo yale alecha. It shouldn't come on top of your body. What if you have shatnez under your body? What if you want to walk barefoot on a shatnez carpet? What if you want to sit on a plush couch where you sink into it? If the sides underneath you, it'll wrap itself around, so it might come to warm you up. So the Rabbanan made a gzerah, it's a rabbinic prohibition, to sit on a couch that has shatnez when you sink into it. that maybe Shema Yela Nima Achas, perhaps underneath it'll come and wrap itself on top of you and be warmed on top. That's an Issa Darabonon, to have Shatnez underneath. So what do you do? And if you want to go to a hotel, you want to go away to friends or non-religious family, you don't have to have a seat. It doesn't look very, not very comfortable. So you have to know in all these cases, Safek Darabonon Lekula. So since shatnez is only, the derais is if it's on your body, underneath is only a suffix or terabonon, and it's only a suffix derabonon. You don't even know if it's shatnez at all. But it's a suffix on derabonon, it can be makel. So especially if you're leaving your shoes and socks on, or you're walking you're not coming in direct contact with the carpet or the rug. If you're wearing long pants and you're not in contact with the upholstery, it's a suffix derabonon, all these cases. Public transportation around the world today, you don't have to worry about it. Most of it's made out of synthetic. I've been to in England and Russia and America and Canada. I mean, almost every place today, the public transportation is made out of synthetic material. We don't really have to worry about it. It's not much of an issue. And so it's a suffix the abundance, so you could be makel. However, if your own house, if you have a couch in your own house, so if you're able to check it, that would be recommended. All right, now, so there was a story that the famous, actually pretty famous, that the Steiplerovs, it's all. So, when he was a young bucher in Russia, so he wrote the Sefer, the Kehilas Yaakov, and the Chazon Ish got hold of one of the books, and he said, wow, this will be a good shidduch for my sister. So they invited the Steipler to come travel to meet his the Chazon Ish's sister. So he was a big masmid, so he learned, used to learn 36 hours straight. And then when he would, he figured, I'll make a mishmar before I go. I'm gonna waste so many hours on the train. I'll sleep when I get on the train. So he learned 36 hours, and then he got onto the train. And when he got onto the train, he realized, he saw the upholstery of the chair, and he had a suffix, he didn't know what it was made out of. He was afraid maybe he'd fall asleep, maybe his warm is cold, maybe he would get warmed up from it. Kitzer, he had a chashash on the upholstery, so he remained standing for another 4 hours. On the train ride. He came to the date, he was exhausted, he fell asleep on her. She was very insulted. So she said, I'm not marrying her, forget it. Mama should have been. So she told the Chazon Ish, she said, well, that proves he's a Yiras Shamayim, give him another chance. So he rested, and then the next date, he was alert, and the rest is history. That's where Chaim Kanevsky's father. And so people heard that story. So they said, oh, very good. So there's some guy today in Bnei Brak who walks around with a cardboard box every time he goes on buses, okay? So that's very nice. But if you wanna, that would be true in Russian upholstery 90 years ago, okay? Today, if you wanna be like the Steipler, so steig like him, be a batsman, learn 36 hours. To walk around with chumras that have absolutely no basis in halakha, especially practicality, there's no issue whatsoever about it. Okay, today all the things are made out of synthetic. These chairs are made of synthetic. Somebody just asked me yesterday for Kohanim, that they go to a strange shul, they have the dukkan, they have the little little carpets over here. Okay, most of those carpets, if you go to a shower, you step out of the shower, all of those are synthetic. You don't have to worry about them. So, in all these, especially the Kohanim wearing socks, they don't, there's mamash no issue about it. So, you could be makel. If it's your own couch, though, so you should know. About 30 years ago, most couches in Israel were made out of shatnez. They were made of wool upholstery and little buttons that you find in the back of the backs. They're sometimes sewn on with a strong linen thread. So those had issues. Also, the stitching that went around the wool upholstery, that was a problem. So if it's your own house and you could fix it, fine. You put a plastic slip cover over it, or you put something else you have not in direct contact. Because it's only a derabanan, you have all these things that can be makel. So if you get an old Yerusha, so there's something to check out. Otherwise, we don't have to worry about it. Mattresses are usually firm today. There's also usually not an issue. It's usually fine. Last week, I went to a factory to give a hechsher here in Israel on a mattress factory. It's mamish, they're usually fine. There was such a mattress that I saw an advertisement for. It was called a summer winter mattress. It was a very thick mattress. One side, the winter side, they put a thin layer of wool to be close to your body to warm you up. And then in the summertime, you flip it upside down, and then you have a piece of linen there that'll make it cool, the linen side, okay? Even that, So it sounds like a Shabbos, like it says on the label, wool and linen layers, but they're not touching, they're far apart. It's, even there, there's mekhilim in a case like that. So today, you do not have to worry about matches. It's firm, also if you want to kill your back, most mattresses are firm today. So all these reasons, you can go to the hotel, you don't have to worry about the mattress, you could leave your socks on, you don't have to worry about the rugs, the public transportation you don't have to worry about, you can be mekhil in all these cases. What if you want to borrow your friend's wool winter coat and they didn't check it for Shabbos though? So since it's alecha, that's a possible is deraisa, they have to be a little more machmir. So we have to know, so there you have to call up and see if that's a type of brand that might have a shaila or not. So there is what to be concerned about. But all the cases of suffix, the rabbanon, it can be mekel. Okay, let's talk about now the different types of the nature of the materials that we might encounter in today's textile marketplace. Okay, so the next one up we have is cotton. Okay, cotton comes from a plant, and here they take, what they do is they take a little stalk, they get rid of the stalk over here, they take a little white flower on top, and that's where we get our cotton puffs. We gather them all together. We do shua, tavi, venuz. We do the three processes, which will now demonstrate what that's all about. Okay, and the question is, okay, but cotton is a powerful material. You can mix it with both wool or linen. There's no issue. If you got a cotton shirt or cotton t-shirt, cotton, there's no problem about cotton. All right, now, what is, let's talk about here for a second. All right, the question is now, how do you go from the raw material, though, of wool, how do you go from the raw material into the finished product? How do you do that? Perhaps you want to be like this guy over here. Okay, but except for Bedouins or something that walk this, most of the civilized people need a type of process by which to convert the raw wool. What is the process? The process is the word shatnez. Shatnez is an abbreviation of three Hebrew words, shua tavi venuz, which is the combing, spinning, and weaving process. It's also part of the lamites melachos of Shabbos. We know the different series of malachas. The first series of malachas is called the food making process, starting from karisha, plowing, all the way to betzias apas, the baking process. The second series of malachas is the cloth making process, where they made the tapestries and the big de kahuna in the Mishkan. The first of the processes is they do malacha of gziza. After they shear the wool, they take the wool off the back of the sheep. That's the malacha of gziza. Now, out in pasture, the sheep is going to pick up all kinds of foreign materials into his fleece. Okay, there's all kinds of rocks and mud and straw. It gets caught into that. You can't do much with it as is. So they put it into a caustic bath of chemicals that burns out the impurities. That's malacha of libun, of cleansing. Afterwards, they add dye or color, malacha of tsovea. Okay, and afterwards, we're ready for the first of Mal malachas, the shin ayin. Okay, the combing process, which will now demonstrate how that's done. So I have over here these handheld cards, or it looks like a brush that has metal teeth. And what they do is they take the tangled wool, and you put the tangled wool in the edge. You take a second brush, and like you brush your hair in the morning, what that does is it takes out a lot of the tangles. And now, this is the malacha of, we said, of Shua. Now, we know in today's tzitzis marketplace, there's a type of tzitzis, you can't just take a regular baking string and put it into your garment. The tzitzis have to be made shazur l'shma, has to be twisted or spun l'shem mitzvah tzitzis. Some say not only does the twisting have to be made for the purpose of tzitzis, let's go back two steps. Even the combing process should also be done for the shem mitzvah tzitzis. This is known as the chumra called nifutz l'shma. All right, this is a type of tzitzis on the marketplace called nifutz l'shma. That means that even when they put the wool in, they combed it l'shem mitzvah tzitzis. It's a hand-done process, it's not done by machine. So that's called nifutz and shua. Well, this is the combing. Those are the exact same processes, shua or nifutz. Okay, after we take out the combed out wool, we're ready for the next of our process, the test, the tfiya. So now we have our oversized dreidel. We should have practice after Hanukkah. And what we do is, by putting some wool here, we give it a little twist over here, we're now producing a woolen yarn. Okay, that's the test, the tefillah. Afterwards, we have the nun zayin, we have the weaving process. So we go 1, 2, 3, we have a Barbie doll blanket. All right, from the shtiyah ne'erev. So what we did is here, we went from the raw wool into the finished woven product. Okay, we did all three processes. Okay, the same thing can also be done with linen. So I showed you before, the linen, the flax plant produces linen threads. Underneath this green bark, they have the straw-like material that we take out. And it says actually in Sefer Yeshua that Rochav hid the spies, the meraglim, on the roof, and she hid them in Pishtei Etz. This is Pishtei Etz, okay? You have a lot of it, it'll camouflage the guy pretty good. All right, but what you could do also, you could take the long stalks out, and you could also put them into the cards. All right, now, let's clean that out a little bit. And what you do is you take the comb, the flax, you put it in here. You take the second comb, and you do the shua. You do the tefillah. At this point, you could also add the color of dye. All right, it comes in three delicious flavors, chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry. And then from that, you could weave it into the back of your collar, of a men's suit. So again, we went from the raw process, the raw flax, into the finished woven material. When the Torah says you're not allowed to have shatnez, that would refer to the following. If somebody wanted to take some wool, put the wool into the cards, and then you take some linen or flax, and you put it into the cards simultaneously, and not to make shatnez? What we say before by Klai Zroyim, grafting the tree, allowed to do it? We said if a goy does the action, so the fruits are permissible. Okay? But the Jew's not allowed to do the action. So we're allowed to do the action of making shatnez?
Yes.
It's also Klaiim. So here we have to know. The Torah switched. We had two psukim. The first pasuk told us, Beged Klaiim Shatnez lo yale alecha. It should not come upon you. The second pasuk in Parshas Ki Teitzeh switched and said, Lo silbash shatnez. Don't wear shatnez. From these two psukim together, we learn out the halacha criteria. You're not allowed to have hanah derech levisha. You can't have the physical benefit from the wearing of shatnez. In this respect, it's different than milk and meat, where you're not allowed to even work in McDonald's and flip cheeseburgers, even you have no intention of eating. Just putting together the thing is usur. That'll be usur. Here, there's no issue like that. It's only hanas levisha. So it's not like chametz on Pesach. If you accidentally purchase a shatnez garment, you may sell it to a goy. You're allowed to have monetary benefit from it. Okay. However, if you do sell to the goy, you should somewhere on the label write that it has shatnez in it, in order that he shouldn't sell it back to another Jew. And he'll say, "I got it from this Jew," and then they won't realize it. So the rabbanan says you should at least mark it that it contains wool linen, write it on the label or something like that. So you are allowed to do it. It's only hanas levisha that you're not allowed to do. So I'm allowed to make shatnez. So I put the wool and the linen. I do the shua together. I take out the combination wool linen. I do the tefiah. I do the spinning. I do the shnuz. I weave it or sew it into my garment. That'll be shatnez according to all halakhic opinions. What if I only have one process? What if I have a wool suit and my button pops off and I want to sew it on with a linen thread? So it's nuz. It's sewn together. That'll be shatnez according to most halakhic opinions. Practically speaking, in one garment, if there's anywhere wool and linen anywhere attached to that one garment, it'll be usur, and you're gonna have to try to remove it. Okay, that's some of the basic laws. We have the shatnez deraisa, shatnez derabanan. In the case of the suffix, we said you could be mekel. All right, that's as far as the wool is concerned. All right, now, as we mentioned before, so what's the story with the cotton? So cotton is a parva material. Cotton, we said, it comes from the plant over here, and they get all those cotton balls. From there, they do shua tovivanuz, like we just demonstrated. And from there, we're going to get our cotton shirts, our cotton pajamas, our kippot, are usually made out of cotton. All right, cotton is parv. You can mix it with both wool and linen. If it's 100% cotton, there's no issue whatsoever. You can wear it. You don't even need checking. Cotton denim or dungaree material is cotton. So they usually don't require testing. It's usually fine. Okay, that's as far as cotton is concerned. The next of the natural materials we have to discuss is silk. Anybody know where silk comes from? Silkworms, that's right. So they usually feed in the, they raise and produce in China. They feed on the mulberry bush. And now we're going to have a quick lesson in Niflos HaBorei. Now, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created humans unlike worms. When it's cold outside, we start shivering and it raises our body temperature. When it's hot, we perspire and we sweat and it cools us down. So that's because we have a mechanism that is able to regulate the temperature. These worms, though, are cold-blooded creatures. So if it become the cold winter season, they would freeze to death. They don't have internal body heat. So how do they survive? So Kadosh Baruch Hu has to make it a different process. What they do is they spin themselves a little cocoon. And at the end of the season, they come out, transmorphosis, they come out a little butterfly at the end of the season, 6 months later. All right. The question is, where does he get the raw material to keep himself warm, to hibernate during the winter? Where does he get it from? So take a look at this next picture. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put a certain enzyme in this lowly worm's mouth. He spritzes it and it freezes in contact with the air. Then he goes round and round like Spider-Man and he creates the silk thread. They pay then a Chinese lady $1 a day and she unravels the stuff. And from that, we're going to get our silk ties or silk kimono. Okay, silk is parv. Again, you can mix it with both wool or linen. If it's a regular 100% silk, usually there's not an issue. It's fine. Okay, all this is the natural materials. Besides that, we have also the world of synthetics. What is that? So today they take petroleum or neft, they put it through a pipe. It has like a little shower head in the end. And from that, it freezes in contact with the air. And from that, we get all of our synthetic or plastic materials. That's known as polyester, nylon, spandex, lycra, acetate, acrylic, all the synthetic type of names. It's plastic. It's parv. It can mix with both wool and linen. No issue whatsoever. So the question is, again, why did Hashem say you're not allowed to mix wool and linen? Like, what's special about these two materials? Someone wants to suggest maybe Hashem doesn't want you to mix the animal kingdom with the plant kingdom? That doesn't make any sense. Because you're going to have cotton from a plant together with the wool from an animal. That's fine, no problem. And why is only why only sheep wool and goat wool is okay? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Rather, this is what the Satan and the Umas HaOlam tell us. What are you Jews keeping these mitzvahs for? They're illogical. We say, you're right. It doesn't make any sense. It's a chok. It's a gzeres hamelech. And we don't ask questions. We do it because Hashem told us to do so. So when we grow up in Orthodox Jews, we heard the concept of this chukim and this mishpatim. We know the concept of a chok. That's a good explanation. We could buy that. Very often I have to fly around the world to give hechsherim on different factories. I was once on a plane going to Istanbul, Turkey. I'm going back there next week also, or another week or two, to give another hechsher on a different factory. And I'm sitting on a plane next to a guy, and we're schmoozing, and he says, sir, what do you do for a living? So I tell him I'm a textile expert. I check for shatnez. So he says, what's that? And so he said, it says right in Deuteronomy 22:11. Look it up yourself. Do not mix wool and linen. Several pieces of yachto. He says, that's fascinating. The Bible talks about such mundane things. I said, yeah. And so he says, Rabbi, why can't you wear wool and linen? Yeah, so I can tell him, Xerus HaMelech, you have to tell him something. So I like to tell him the story about Cain and Hevel. And the Medrash says that Cain brought from Pre-Hadama, which because I'll tell us that was the flax plant. Hevel brought from the sheep, which is the wool. Here's the first time in history that it was machloikis between the brothers, there was jealousy, there was a first retzach or murder in the world, 25% of the world population got wiped out. And what happened is, so the Torah says, later by Matan Torah, we won't want to mix the two things together. We don't the carbon with Cain and Hevel, even in clothing. So what we do is we have to keep them, each one has to go separate. We don't want them to come together. That spells trouble. So Cain goes on this side, you can wear a linen garment, you can get a Hevel wool, you have Cain over there. When they come together, that's trouble. So we separate them. So what we do is, by checking for shatnez, we're making like a political statement. We don't like what's going on, this machloket and sinat chinam and all these things. We want to go back to prehistoric times before there was fighting and bickering. We want to have world peace, brotherhood. Peace and brotherhood. Rabbi, that's beautiful. Everybody loves peace and brotherhood. Okay? So that's why. So by checking for shatnez, we're showing we want to promote world peace. Okay, why is cashmere okay? And why this? So it doesn't make sense. That's part of the folk. What we have to do now is we have to use science and technology not to question the Torah, but to figure out how to be able to mekayim the Torah. That's our job now. So with the understanding of the nature of wool and linen and how the textile process is going to work, that will better help us understand what things will require testing, and then we'll be able to know how to properly mekayim this mitzvah. Okay, so let's move now to the part two of the share. Before I do that, I'll ask if there are any questions about different types of materials on the textile world right now, or anything we talked about until now. Any questions?
Is there really anything? Do I have to wear my socks if I go to a motel?
Do you have to wear?
Wear my socks if I go to a motel? Is there any issue with the carpets at all?
Most wall-to-wall carpet is almost all synthetic. It's too expensive to make a... But when you have a Persian rug that are very expensive, like under the dining room table, those Persian rugs are sometimes made out of wool, and it's real wool, and then the backing, they don't use the cheaper jute, they use actually linen, or they might use linen around the fence. So wall-to-wall carpet in the hotel you don't have to worry about. If you're going to go to someone's house, then there might be an issue to leave your socks on.
The area rug that was hand woven or something.
So it's usually real wool, and then the backing might be a problem, but regular wall-to-wall is not a problem. Okay, I once had a Rav who is in Olma Emes now, but he was a Poisik, and he said a number of years ago, he said, it's not shchiach that you never come to a shatnez on a rug. So he said that you don't need to, because you never get, it's not shchiach that people walk around barefoot on the rug. He woke up in the winter and he went down and he had to get a drink, and he found himself standing barefoot on his own rug. So he said, "Oh, I guess it is shchiach." He changed his plaque. He said, "Okay." So he started. So yes. If it's a rug, if it's an expensive Persian rug, you pay $20,000 for it or something. So yeah. So then the chashash. The cheapest stuff is like I said, the little Birkos Kohanim rugs, or the bathroom mats or things like that. Then there's no issue. You don't have to worry about that. Any other questions?
Is there any reason to carry around the portable sentence lab?
For me, yes. For you, no.
I'm thinking to be machmer for any reason.
For me, wherever I go, people ask me questions. So for
I'm
it's a little trade.
I'm saying, just like you said, to check your own house couch. So is there any reason to...
You don't know how to check. You have to learn. You have to take the course in order to know how to check. It's an expertise. Okay. All right. Let's move on now to the second part. And now we're gonna do the clothes making process. So how do you make clothing? Okay. So, and then also let's talk about the nature of wool and linen first of all.
Okay. So
first up, we said talk about the wool. All right. So we said wool comes from the sheep. They do the gziza, they do the shearing off the back, okay? And now for this purpose over here, okay, let's think about how the wool comes from the back of the sheep to our clothing, all right? For this, I asked my friend to come join us, his little Shepsel, okay? And here Shepsel has his whole body is covered with wool. All right, now, if you live in Eretz Yisrael climate, we know that in the summertime it almost never rains. So what happens is you have nice desert hot climate. And if it never rains, that means he never takes a shower. He's out in the pasture most of his life. And what's going to happen is if you don't take a shower for 6 months, probably our hair would also look, you know, like this. You know, get all clumped together. All right. But what happens is, so here, so Shepsel's outside for the whole summer. All of a sudden, we start davening, Mashiv Ruach Amir to Goshen, by Sukkot's time, boom, we have a thunderclap, the rain comes down, so Shepsel's outside, his dry, scaly hair is going to absorb all of the water, he's going to become so bloated, because like a sponge, it'll absorb all the water like a sponge, he won't be able to move and get food. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu put a certain natural grease called lanolin on the that makes the wool keep it waterproof. So the water just drips right off the back, because of the lanolin, the natural grease on the sheep. We today use the lanolin for hand creams and baby shampoos, and which with lanolin. That's what we do with the lanolin. Okay. So, anyways, so they do the. So that's one thing. And watch what happens now when you take water and you put it on a woolly material. So the drips more or less stay on the surface over here. Okay, and then it's then you're able to it doesn't go into the thing itself. That's one of the natures of wool. Okay, that's the due to the lanolin. All right, that's one thing about wool. All right, so it's waterproof. Wool is naturally waterproof. All right, a lot of times winter coats or hats are made out of wool. It's because it's in the winter, you know, it's waterproof. Okay, another thing we know about wool is that it keeps us warm in the wintertime. How does that work? So the answer lies in the structure of its fibers. If you look at the fibers of the wool, they don't line up side by side. Rather, they are wavy and they have an interlocking pattern. So one goes into the shetach, or the area of the others. It creates a pattern, an interlocking pattern. You have air pockets. The air pockets now fill up the cracks. And now, when you're wearing the sweater, your body heat is attempting to escape, but there's already, the air cracks are filled up with the air. So you're feeling the body heat is going to hit the garment and bounce back to you. Then you feel the body heat bouncing back to you. That's known as the insulating property of wool. That's why wool blankets or wool coats or wool sweaters, that's why wool is very good, because it has the insulating property. All right, we actually discuss this property every day in Psukei Zimra. Hanosen shelet ketzamer. Hashem gives snow like wool. So what was happening? So David HaMelech was in a cold Yerushalayim winter one day. It doesn't snow every year, but once in a while it does. And what happens is, so like in Cheshbon HaNefesh, in the Chovos Halvavos, he probably caught some snowflakes and he was starting to do his bonanus, you know, Shari Bechina, and try to understand the nature of, you know, the Flos HaBayre. He saw that no two snowflakes look alike. When they fall down, it creates a blanket of snow. Why is that? Because if it wouldn't happen, it would become very cold, and then the whole ground would become a frozen block of ice. Everything would like solid block. All of the things that were in the ground, like the worms and everything that till the soil, would die. So what happens? Before it gets very cold, so Hashem first of all sends a blanket of snow, so the warmer air gets trapped underneath, and over here, then comes the cold front on top of the snow, and then that very cold part, it's insulating, and it causes the warm ground to stay fertile. So the earthworms are able to stay survive, and then we have food next year. So Baruch Hashem. So David HaMelech said, Hanosen shelet ketzamer. Look at that. Just like the insulating property of the clothes warms me, so too the snow is just like the wool. He already knew the greatness of the wool. He already studied his clothes. He knew how wool keeps us warm. The chiddush was that even the snow is like the wool now. So he said, Baruch Hashem, we'll be able to have food next year. That's a pasuk in what we say in the morning. Okay, another thing about wool is, we know that if you try to take the wool and you squeeze it and give it a kvetch and you let go, it bounces back, right? You want to see from a different direction, you hold the wool and you push down on it, it bounces back, okay? This is known as the resilient property. Why is that important to know? Because let's say you're learning the Beis Medrash with your chavrusa, and they say, I think this is the pshat in the Gemara. What are you talking about? And grabs it by your lapel over here. If you don't want your suit to be wrinkled, so if it's a wool suit or a wool blend, the wool will naturally bounce back. So the resilient property of wool is another reason why manufacturers want to put it in the outer shell. So we have wool, we said, either in the outer shell for any one of the reasons. It's waterproof. It's also good for warmth. It's good for keeping the shape. Okay. It's also fire retardant. Okay. So let's watch what happens. All right. Now don't try this at home, but watch what happens when you attempt to burn wool. Okay, here we have over here. It singes and it goes out. It doesn't catch fire. That's another property of wool. So in the olden days, so firefighter equipment was also made out of wool. Today they make it out of synthetic, treated that it shouldn't catch fire either. Okay, but wool is also another, was also a natural fire retardant material. So there's a lot of benefits to having wool in the wardrobe. Okay, that's as far as the wool is concerned. All right, let's talk about now, quickly, before we do that, there's something else you can do about with wool. That's known as the felting process. What is that? All right, the felting process is, I'll take a look over here, down by my finger, What they used to do is they take a piece of animal skin. They line up side by side with the tufts of wool. Then they add water. And then they tie it to the back of the horse. And it goes for a gallop on a hot summer day in the wild blue yonder. And now what you have is a chemical reaction taking place. Instead of the fibers being woven together, they're matted or pressed together. That's known as the felt material, okay? Felt material is going to be used in the backs of men's collars, okay? Felt material, okay? Also in yeshivisha hats. Is there a problem of shatnas in yeshivisha hats? Usually not. The reason being because it's made out of angora, all right? But we said angora is made from a rabbit. So if you ever heard a magician pull a rabbit out of the rabbit is the hat. Okay? Also, okay, felt tip pens, okay? The spitz, the felt tip is usually made out of wool, all right? Also, tennis balls. Notice the natural bounce. You think it's because of the rubber inside, but if you look at the surface of the tennis ball, it has wool, so it actually bounces. It's resilient. It balances back into its shape. The inside core of an American baseball has over a mile of wool, so when you hit it off the bat, you're able to hit a home run. It just jumps right off, the resiliency. So we see here how the knowledge of the nature of our clothing is able to help us in our daily life. All right? There's one drawback that people sometimes don't like about wool. And they say that I don't like wool because it scratches or it's itchy. I'm allergic to it. They don't really mean allergic to it, but what they mean is as follows. Wool is a type of a scratchy material. And what happens is, now why are they saying that? Because if you take a piece of wool, let's take a look and we see here. There we go. Take a look at the picture here. Down below is the lanolin that we said, the natural grease that keeps it waterproof. But another way the Ribbono Shel Olam made the actual fibers themselves to keep them waterproof, besides the lanolin, is that the actual fiber itself, under high magnification, it looks like the shingles on a roof. So when the wool or the water, you walk outside wearing your wool winter coat, so the water will hit the shingle and it'll go from shingle to shingle, boop, and it'll drop right off. So a dual action of both the lanolin together with the actual shape will keep the wool waterproof. Okay. Now, if you have, though, sensitive skin, and you have tens of thousands of these scales running against your sensitive skin, so you may understand why it itches you when you wear wool, and therefore you may want to avoid it. It's not the end of the world, though. Today, using science and technology, they could do either file off the scales, or alternatively, they could paint in the cracks. So you could have today a summer wool that is so soft to the touch, you'll never know that you're wearing wool. A regular shirt could be made out of wool. You won't even know that it's wool. Once it's wool, it could be, you have to check and make sure there's no linen. Okay, but that's as far as the wool is concerned. All right, now, so that's as far as the nature of wool. Let's now discuss the nature of linen. Okay, for a second. All right, for this I need two volunteers. Help volunteer?
No.
Huh? Anybody? Want to come volunteer? Yeah, thank you very much. Okay. Okay, it goes to come on the side. It could come over here. Wait, just so you can see also. Okay. There you go. Just hold one side. You can hold the other side. Okay.
Is that me?
Yeah, okay. There we go. Just hold that up. All right. That's thread number one. Okay, now, we know in Hilchus Kashrus by Shechita, when you do the ritual slaughter, we know that the shochet has to use a blade which is chad v'chalak. It has to be perfectly smooth. Alright? So the way to do it is they take the fingernail and you run it along the length of the blade and you see any nicks will be able to be determined. So take with free hand, I would like you to just run your fingers along the thread over here and describe to everybody what you feel.
Rough.
Very bumpy.
Bumpy, rough, okay. All right, notice the thickness of this thread over here. And now I'd like you to compare it to thread, hold it please a second. And let's compare that one to thread number two over here. Okay, first of all, which one's thick, which one's thin?
This is cut on the seventh thread, isn't it? Very thin.
Very thin. Very
thin.
Smooth, glides, yeah. Right, okay. Very good. Okay, give him a round of applause. Thank you very much. Okay.
Click and check later.
Okay, so the first one, the red one, was a linen thread. Now, why do we have to know that? Because very often I get the following shiloh. I said, Rabbi, I just purchased a wool pair of pants or a wool skirt or whatever, and I gave it in for Shabbos testing. But afterwards, I gave it to the seamstress or the tailor to do alterations. Maybe the tailor used linen threads. How do I know? Do I have to check it again? So we tell them as follows. Since linen threads are thick and bumpy, it's very unlikely that they're going to use it in a sewing machine because it's going to skip stitches. They're always going to use the nylon or cotton thread that will glide right through the machine. So it depends. If the tailor just made a cuff or a hem, it's made it from a sewing machine, so you do not have to be choishish that he used linen, because he's not going to put linen in such a machine like that. However, if the lady had a slit in the skirt and a shesa, and she wanted to close it up, so then you have to see what's that other material made out of. So I had a lady in the old city, so she had a green linen skirt. She gave it to a religious seamstress in the old city. She was looking around, and she found another green material. And then we gave her the lecture, and then we did some testing, and she found that the religious seamstress put a wool piece into the linen skirt. Okay? So instead of to make it sinulah, she made it shatnez, shkayach. Like, why? Because she's thinking green. She's not thinking about wool and linen. Shatnez is a mitzvah, so it's under the radar. You just don't think about it. That's her profession. She's a seamstress, and she didn't think about it. Because I had another lady who went shopping before Pesach. A couple of years ago, she went to Borough Park. She bought a skirt. It was a gray skirt, and it was a little tight on her. So the religious seamstress in Borough Park added a little extension so she'd be able to close on the skirt. She wore it. When she came back to Giselle, she gave it to me to check. That little piece, that extension, was a linen piece put on a wool skirt. Because she was thinking gray, or black gray. That matches. She wasn't thinking about wool and linen. Okay? So again, whenever we add materials or match up materials, we have Purim coming up, we have Purim costumes, you have all kinds of patchwork or quilt work, you have to see what that's made out of. Alright? I once had an aunt, Allah Shalom, so when my baby was born, she made a baby, she knitted a little baby blanket for the kid. So little squares, she had a whole bunch of little colorful squares, and then she put the whole thing together. Well, I found one square up here was made out of a little wool, one square down there was made out of linen. It's all one garment, so it's shatnez. So you can either cut them in half, and then have two different ones, that'd be okay. All right, but as is, it was so she took them out, and she redid it for me. Fine, but you have to be aware of what's going on. When you add different materials, especially costumes, or clowns, and they put all kinds of patchwork or quilt work, when you match up different materials, or if you get a hole on the man's trousers, okay, and he puts another patch, or between the legs, and he adds material, what is that second material? That's something that you have to check out. But if it's just a regular machine stitch or a hem or something, you don't have to worry about it, you can wear it as is. That'll be fine. Okay, so that's as far as the garment, the garment is concerned. Now,
a linen shirt.
Okay, yes. Go ahead, ask the question first.
Would you have those issues, because of using, having buttons that might be sewn on with wool or...
Yeah, question. If you have a linen shirt, we're going to say you'll need to check for wool. If you have a wool shirt, you'll need to check for linen. All right. That's until we discussed now was the Torah prohibition or even the possible rabbinic prohibition, if it's in the same one garment. The question was asked beforehand, before this year, what about two separate garments? What if I have a linen shirt and I want to wear a wool sweater directly on top of that? So the Beis Yosef does not discuss it, so it's mutter for Sfaradim. However, the Ramah comes along and says as follows. If you can't get the bottom garment off without first removing the top one, so for example, if you have a sleeve, a linen shirt that has long sleeves, the only way you could get, and you put a wool sweater with sleeves on top of that, the only way you could get the shirt off is first you have to take the sleeve on the top of the sweater, and then you could get the sleeve of the shirt off underneath it. So, the Pashuk says, Semu Pishtim Yachtov. It's sort of pinned down, it's Yachtov. It's sort of, if you can't get the bottom one off, the Ramah has a svar, and he says, it's also attached. So it's a Chumrah of the Ramah. So for this halakha, two separate garments, he says you shouldn't put one directly on top of the other. What if you have a linen shirt and you want to tuck it into your wool pants? So since one comes up on top and one goes down, there's no problem. That's fine. Or if you have a linen shirt and you wear your wool tzitzis underneath, so since you can open the top button and just pull out the tzitzis over top, there's no sleeves, that's also fine. All right. So any kind of way, even if you have a sleeve that has a very wide, like a vest, if you had a vest, a sleeveless vest, but and even if you could do a contortionist act and theoretically get your arm out, that would also be okay. As long as it's not yachtov, it's not pinned down, that'll be it will be, if you can any way possibly get it off, that will be an issue according to the Ramah, so for Ashkenazim. Some Svardim are also machmir like the Ramah, because it makes sense. All right, but for this halacha, it has to be, unlike the regular halacha, we said any amount of wool, even one stitch of wool and linen, or linen and wool, constitute in the same garment. In one garment, if you have wool and linen, it's going to be shatnez. Here, according to by the Chumrah of the Ramah, you have to have two separate garments. Here's a little bit different. This is the question that Rabbi Nussbaum asked earlier. His daughter had, can I say over the shaylah? His daughter had a linen dress, and it was called in shul, and she wanted to wear on it a wool coat. Okay, so that's a shaylah. If it's a dress that has sleeves, and now the wool coat directly on top of it, so is that permissible or not? So for this halakha, you have to know. You have to, if the garment underneath has to be rove linen, has to be majority of linen, 50% or up, and the garment on top would have to be 50% or wool, more of wool. In that case, you call the garment by the rove. So if it's a linen garment, 50% plus, it's called a linen garment. And then you have directly on top of that, a wool garment, that's also one on top of the other, that'll be the Chumrah of the Ramah. You should not wear one directly on top of the other. However, if you have, which is a case which is more common, you have a linen shirt, 100% linen shirt, and then the sweater is a 30% wool, 70% acrylic. That kind of sweater, oh, it has wool in it. No, well, I don't care, because it's 70% acrylic. That kind of sweater you could wear directly on top, because that garment is called a synthetic sweater for this purpose. If it be in the same garment, I don't care numbers. In the same one garment, then the percentages, you can ignore the percentages. Then it'll be, but for this halakha, when they're two separate ones, then it'll make a difference. Also, for this halakha, if she would be wearing the linen dress with sleeves, the wool coat would have sleeves, but she'd be wearing a cotton or an acrylic sweater, that's a separation between the two. So on directly on top of that linen dress, she would be wearing an acrylic sweater, which is polyester, synthetic, and then the wool on top of that, that also, even according to Ramah, would be okay. All right, so that's in the same one garment, we don't make all those calculations, because it's only a Chumrah of the Ramah in this case, so there, that's where we have these coolers. All right, that's as far as the, so that answers the shaila. But if you have a linen shirt, we'll see the rules later. Once it has linen, you have to check it to make sure there's wool. Once it has wool, we make sure that it doesn't have linen.
Does anyone have linen shirts? Are there linen shirts around?
There are linen shirts around. The ones today are very often, they're 55% linen and 45% cotton. They are rove linen. Now, what happens is, if you're wearing your regular jacket and a suit jacket or a sweater, and there might be 100% wool, those linen shirts you may have a problem. All right? Kittels, most kittels that they sell, the cheaper ones are cotton, there's no problem. Okay? But Lel Pesach or Chasanim under the chuppah, okay? There are the expensive ones are linen kittels. Okay? If you have a linen kittel and you're wearing, and then on top of that, you put your wool winter coat, that might be an issue, and it's going to be a problem. Under the chuppah, it's going to be blocked tefillas. Okay? So there's something to be careful about. Or Lel Seder, if it's cold, and you want to wear a wool sweater under the linen kittel, you can't get one off of the other, then you have to be careful about that as well.
If I go out and buy a spool of thread,
yeah.
Isn't it always, do I ever have to think it's going to be linen or wool?
Question, is a spool of thread a shayla of wool linen? Wool in
or,
itself.
Either or.
Okay, a regular spool of thread. Okay, the regular spool of thread, the regular standard thread that you buy in today's sewing accessory store are usually be cotton or nylon, because we said they're going to use it through the machine. It's going to be hard to find a regular linen thread unless it's a novelty yarn, okay, multicolored or something like that, or yarns. Sometimes yarns for sweaters may be different textures or things running through that. That might be an issue with that. Okay, regular stuff that the ruba is going to be cotton or nylon. It's hard to find a regular linen thread. However, I get tailoring books So part of the, if you want to be a tailor, you buy a book and you say how to do tailoring. They tell you, get yourself a nice spool of linen thread because there's different parts around the suit that you want to reinforce and they're going to want to put the linen there. Okay, so that's as far as we said the linen, just to know that it's thick and bumpy. But the main reason why people will want to use linen is because of its tensile strength. Linen is a very strong material. So whenever you want to reinforce, that's why the sewing book recommends that tailors use linen threads. Okay, so now with that information, we know where wool might be, and linen, why they want to do it. Let's put the two things together and let's see where our clothing might have wool and linen together. So let's think about it. So let's say a person wants to manufacture boys bar mitzvah suits. Okay, so what kind of material should we use? Right, so let's think about it. So if you wanted to keep the shape, you don't want the wrinkle, so what would they use on the outside? Maybe use some wool, okay? Wool's expensive though, you have to do shoe or tubby venues. They may want to use something a little cheaper. So what they do is they blend synthetic material. This is a synthetic material. This is white, looks like a scratchy type of material. This is puch. We have a puch blanket or sleeping bags are sometimes made out of this stuff. If you have, make a little incision, you can check it by yourself. If you see the white stuff, then it's usually fine. So it's completely synthetic, you don't have to worry about it. If it's a complete down, you know, with feathers or this white stuff, there's no problem. And the shiny winter coats that are made are very puffy. If it has this stuff, no issue, doesn't need checking, you're fine. It's 100% polyester. However, what they do is that the synthetic threads over here, they give it an artificial look. It also has it gives the air pockets, and it'll keep you warm. However, what happens is that after a few washings, you ever see a sweater? It's got a little ball starting to form on your sweater. Where does that come from? A little pillion there. So the reason is because what happens is when a Kadosh Baruch Hu makes the wool, it's made to last, all right? It takes a long time, okay? The synthetic stuff, it starts to wash out after a few washings and starts getting these balls starting to form, all right? So it's an acrylic sweater, but it's a lot cheaper because it's man-made. This is synthetic. The wool is expensive. So they want the best of both worlds. They'll blend them together. So you'll have a 60-40 or 70-30%, and you cut the cost drastically in more than half, okay, as far as the suit's concerned. So they might make a wool blend. So the outer shell, in order, it's easily dry cleaned, it's waterproof, it's fireproof, it's wrinkle-proof, it keeps you warm. There are a lot of reasons why on the outer apparel of men's and ladies' clothing, the outer section is going to have a little bit of wool. The back of the collar, we said the felt might also contain wool. But there's another thing about wool that's a little bit of a drawback. Wool is a soft material. So if you take a piece of wool and you put it on a pole, it sags. It doesn't sit nice. If you wear a suit, you want it to take the contour of your body. You want it to look like a broad-shouldered guy. Right? So what do you do? You can't just, in order to build up the inside, they use a network of interfacing that on the inside of a suit. So here's a cutaway section of a man's suit. Here's the lapel. Here's the pocket. Here's the armhole. On top of that, if they would just take the material and sew it, it would bubble. It wouldn't sit nice. So what the tailor had to do is he'd take all these interfacing, he has to sew it down very, very well. And on top of that, after it's sewn down, now you can put the fabric and that'll drape nicely. That's very nice. But look what the tailor used on the inside of the suit to make this interfacing. He took all kinds of scrap materials, leftovers around the factory, and he put in there haphazard whatever was laying around in there. All right, so now what happens when you squeeze this material? It jumps back. So what's that an indication of? Wool. You might have some wool in there as well. All right, you might have wool, or you actually might have horsehair bristles, the same sweeping action that we find in brooms. Now let's learn Hilchos brooms. There's two types of brooms on today's marketplace. You have the synthetic ones that after 3 weeks the teeth go like that and never come back together again. Okay, or you can get the natural horsehair ones with the bristles that go back and forth, back and forth. Why? Because if Baruch Shalom makes something natural, it's made to last. The synthetic stuff falls apart after a while and it won't go back together. It's three times the price, but well worth the investment. All right, so you might have wool in any one of our three places. Either the fabric itself might be blended, the back of the collar might have wool, the interfacing might have wool. And how can you know that there's not one stitch of linen if they're using all kinds of scrap materials on the inside of a suit? Because in one garment, like a suit, any one thread of wool and linen, or linen and wool, there's no bittul. It's not like basav v'chalav. If you have a baby bottle, it spritzes into the chicken soup, and you stir it up, bottle of shishim. You will not find any remnant of that drop of milk. However, you come back 10 years later, if there was a stitch of linen in the wool suit, it's still there. Threads are never bottle. So and, if you have one stitch, it's already problematic. So you're always going to have to check men's suits because of the internal components to see what's going on the inside of the suit. Right? Besides that, we said, where else might you have linen inside the suit? So let's think about it. Man comes home from work or from kollel every day. Okay, takes off his jacket, and he finds a nice place to hang up his jacket on over here, or on a hanger loop. Now what happens over here, so there's a pressure point. You have a pressure point right over here. Now, if you have a woolly material that has air pockets, and then you put a pressure point, what happens when you put a pressure point on an airy material? It's gonna puncture. So you must necessarily reinforce the back of a collar with something nice and strong. And boy, we went through all the different materials that are in the marketplace today. So what's a nice strong type of material? Linen. So here's your most common scenario of shatnez. You have the felt wool on one side, reinforce the back of the collar with a piece of linen. Okay, here's a here's another piece, here's wool, there's linen. Okay, here's a winter coat, wool, linen. All right, it's a, anybody likes, it comes in blue, wool, linen. Okay, fine. So that's the most common scenario to have shatnez over there. Okay, it's not the end of the world. If you had shatnez, so first of all, don't rely on the goyish tailor to remove the shatnez, okay, or even the Jewish tailor for that matter, because what's gonna happen is, they're gonna pull out the main piece of the shatnez, but they're gonna, it jumps, all the residue is gonna be left around the outside, and then when they put the new kosher cotton piece in its place or something else, you won't find the linen that's still underneath there. So only a trained shatnez expert could take out the shatnez and clean it out. I go with a toothbrush to actually clean out all the edges to make sure nothing's left. It's very tedious work. So then you give the kosher piece to the tailor, and then you can give it to him to sew back. Before he put, then you have to check him out. If it's a goy, you have to make sure that he's not gonna just put the new piece back in also. So sometimes I have to ruin it or something in a way that he shouldn't use it. I had a case of a guy who was, a businessman who was going to China, found a nice cheap suit. So he knew about the shatnez, they often use China. The Chinese collars also have linen. So I gave him a piece. So he said, make the suit, a custom made suit. He said, make the suit using my piece of material. The tailor said, I'm not used to your material. He made him a suit with his material. And then he said, and then checked it, and it was shatnez. So, because he likes his own materials. He doesn't want to have anybody else's materials. So, just before, don't rely on the goyish tailors. They don't have daimonis. But, and even a Jewish tailor for that matter, you have to minimize his nesoyan, that he shouldn't, because it's a perfect size. When you take out the shatnez collar, they may want to use the same piece again for measuring purposes. So you have to cut it or ruin it in a way that he shouldn't use the same exact piece. All right, that's the main collar. But it's, in most cases, it's possible to fix. All right, where else might you have the shatnez in the suit though? So if you take off your jacket, you hear sometimes, so there's a pressure point under the arm. So you don't want it to rip through. So what they might do is they might use a linen tape or to go around the armhole. Okay, like something like that. Okay, also there's a piece of the lapel. Here's an arm piece that goes around underneath the lapel over here. So they put a piece of a linen tape underneath to reinforce it. Also, so you have to check that part. Also, when you open and close the buttons, the button might pop off, so you may sew it on with a strong linen thread. The buttonhole that accepts the button, you don't want it to rip through right into the fabric, so they may reinforce the buttonhole from the factory with a strong linen thread as well. Let's go down a little further. In the pocket, you walk around with your watch, your keys, or all kinds of stuff in your pockets, or your change, all of that will cause the hole. You don't want it to rip through. So what they might use is, they might have a piece of linen reinforcement around the pockets. Or the buttonholes underneath, they may actually have a piece of linen reinforcing the buttonholes themselves. Okay, let's move down a little further. A man walks around with his wallet, his phone, his change. in his pocket, okay? All of that, when you're wearing your trousers, pulls you down. So you need something strong to pick everything up. How about a piece of linen under the waistband? A pair of pants, a regular standard man usually knows, the first thing that goes on a pair of pants is the clip in the front. Why? Because after the chunt on Shabbos, what happens is your stomach expands, so there's a pressure point right in the big end of the clip, okay? So the tailor knows that, so he's going to take a little piece of reinforcement, he'll put a little piece of linen under the clip in the front. Also, sometimes you have a key, a chain, a little thing, a clip on your phone or something, they put onto the loops of the pants, okay? So we had a few years ago, four brands of boys' bar mitzvah pants in America, that just the loops, that was the only thing that was shot, it was the loops were reinforced with linen, okay? So if you start thinking about it, it's actually logical in a man's pair of suit and a pair of pants or a jacket. There's 15 strategic places that need to be checked in a regular standard man's pair of pants or trousers. And a Rabbi, in a jacket, there are over 50 strategic places that need testing. In a regular standard man's suit. Thank you. Okay? So these are things that are going to always require shotness testing. Men's suits, jackets. Even if it says 100% polyester, that's the outer shell. They never have to discuss any of the internal components or any of the stitching or anything, they never list that on the label. But there's always a chashash that they're going to be using that stuff. Besides that, they use scrap materials. The scrap material, they take haphazard pieces, like I showed you over here, and they put it over any one of these 50 strategic places, and it could be linen. So even I had a guy davening once upon a time. It was a story. He came to a Motzi Shabbos, somebody knocked on my door, and he tells me he wants me to check his suit for shatnez. So I said, okay, fine. So he tells me the following story. He said he was in shul Shabbos morning, and as he was davening Shmon Esrei, his jacket like went out like that, and he sees his neighbor is like looking at him. He's like, what are you looking at? Well, what's the matter? Nothing. He said, no, tell me, what's the problem? So he said, all right, I just happened to, when you went like that, I noticed the brand that you were wearing. I just wanted to tell you, I'll tell you a story. I had the same brand, mine was shatnez. He said, what are you talking about? How can it be shatnez? It says 100% cotton on it. So that's what I told you. I'll just tell you what happened to me. I'm not telling you what to do with your life, but mine was shatnez. So he said, okay. So that's why he got a little bit nervous. So he came to check it. Sure enough, what happened was the 100% cotton suit, the collar was a wool linen blend of the cotton suit, 100% cotton suit. Cotton is the actual fabric. That's what they write on the label. They don't never have to write about the internal components on the suit. So therefore, it had shatnez on it. Okay, we called Baruch Hashem. He was spared. All right. So that's but in most of these cases here, it's possible to fix. In any one of these cases, it may cost a little bit of money. On certain brands of suits, to fix up a collar, it could cost you like $100 even to fix it up. So, but it's fixable. So if you get a cheap suit from a secondhand store, thrift store, it's probably not worth it. But if today you could buy a regular suit for a few hundred shekels and pay $100, it's probably not worth it, 300-400 shekels. But if you buy, so it's not worth it. But if you buy an expensive Italian suit, it costs you $400-$500. So if you pay another $100, you have a nice quality suit. It is worth it. Okay, so that's as far as the suits are concerned. So men's suits, men's and ladies' and children's wool winter coats always are going to need checking. All right, and because of all the internal components, those things, that's something that does require shatnez. The question is now, what about the other types of forms of shatnez that we might find? So we have, for example, what is the likelihood of having shatnez in the fabric itself? Okay, till now the shatnez just happened to come together. We said in most cases it is fixable when it happens to come together. All right, what about in the fabric itself? So for this, I get the trade magazines. I read all the catalogs that come out and try to keep up with the latest. And we had, I have like, you know, Banana Republic and Land's End, and they have all these catalogs and stuff. And sometimes it says right on the label, a blend of wool and linen. It says right on the label, okay? Or it says, I get, there's a wool promotion company, the International Linen Promotion Company. They try to market their materials. So they tell you in the magazine, it says the wool magazine, it says wool blends with linen to add luster. Like, they're telling you first that it's there. Okay, in a case like that, if it's in the actual fabric, you can't pull it apart. At best, in their case, you could sell to a goy. Just like we said, you should label it, it shouldn't sell back to a Jew, but it is possible to do that. to sell it, you have a monetary benefit. But if it's in the fabric, you can't fix it. There's nothing left. So that's another scenario of shatnez. Another problem of shatnez might come in the shoulder area, because what happens is they have padding. All right, now, in order to make the suit have a fit, you know, the nice broad-shouldered guy, so what they do is they take padding, and they put over here the shoulder pad. To give a nice curve of the shoulder, they put over here, it's called a banana, because it looks like a banana. And then on top of that, they put the fabric, all right? Now, you could use sponge, but there's even something that's cheaper than that. At the end of the day, the factory sweeps up all the leftover residue on the floor, and instead of throwing it out, they recycle it, and they make padding out of it, recycled fabrics. So you might have today a situation called reprocessed material, that they have thousands of different chunks of fibers inside. You have no idea what's going on the inside of our padding. How can you guarantee there's not one thread of linen in your wool suit or wool in your linen suit when they're using crushed up materials? Okay, so this is the shaila called blai begodim. All right, it's actually meikar adin. It's a svek sveka. We said before, shatnez deraisa is if you have shua tavi and nuz, according to some rishonim, shua tavi or nuz, but that's all when it's in the same thing. But here, the material is one thing, and this is another thing, and who said there's any shatnez here? And even if it is, so it's a suffix, if there is wool or linen, you don't know what's in there. And even if it is, maybe it's crushed up beyond recognition, and then there might be a case of bittul, if it's completely crushed up. So because of svek sveka, a double sofek, or even more than that. So the Minchas Yitzchak, the Dayan Weiss, Zatzal from the Badatzei, the Charedis in Yerushalayim, so he said, svek sveka, you could be mekel. Svek sveka, there's a lot of stuff to be mekel. So if you have repressed material, fine. If you can just get rid of it and put it in a sponge, why not? What if you do if it's a whole inside lining of the coat? So today, this afternoon, a girl brought me her winter coat. The whole inside lining was made with this reprocessed material. So I told her, okay, you have a machloikas, the chazon ish in that particular case. He said, yari shamayim yachmir alatzmo. It's better, try to take it out if you can. If you can. In this case, the whole winter coat, you wouldn't have any warmth through it. So she said, is it mutter? I said, yes, it's mutter. You could have the dayan weiss, you could be mekel on that. Ravozner is mekel on the blai begodim as well. So yeah, it's meikar din is kosher. I'm not going to put a non-shatnez label because there's some people, the chazanish is machmir, but it's kosher. So she said, leave it alone, it's okay. Fine. So that's the blai begodim shiloh. All right, we have another scenario of shatnez. We had sweaters, 100% wool sweaters that was coming to the laboratory, and then we found linen blended into the 100% wool sweater. I mean, like, that was strange already, because like, okay, I understand if you have the shoulder pads, you have 100 different materials in 50 strategic locations. I understand that. But here you have a sweater, it's just one layer. Where in the world are they going to, why should they put linen in a regular sweater? Where's that coming from? So we did an investigation and we came to the following conclusion. So I showed you how to do the combing process, the shua, together using these little handheld cards. That's what they did in the olden days. Today they have these giant rollers in the Far East that goes rollers from wool to wool. The first day, the wool company sends the wool and they comb out the wool. The second day, the linen company sends the linen to be combed out. And now, just like we have a concept by Pesach, an 18-minute matzah, we know every 18 minutes we stop the run, every 17 minutes we stop the run, we go with scrub brushes to make sure that the piece of dough doesn't stick to the roller, because the next run will pick it up and it'll make it shatnez. That's good when it's under our control. The matzah baking. What do you think? In the Chinamen, in these giant factories, every time they use a new material, they're going to go and start cleaning out all these giant rollers? Like, that's not normal. Like, when was the last time you cleaned your hairbrush? Like nobody does that. You know, it's, so the Chinaman, he's for sure not going to do that. So what happens is I gave it wool. I got back wool. I wrote on the label 100% wool. In the meantime, it picked up impurities that they don't have to write on the label. And it picked up third, and there's no third material, there's no min shlishi, there's no bittul in it. It's just 100% wool sweater, and it had linen blended in. So there's another scenario of shatnez, and there it wasn't fixable because it was in the fabric itself. So again, if you start thinking about it, okay, so what are we going to do as kosher consumers to guarantee that we're not wearing shatnez in our clothing? So you say, okay, well, let's check the label. Well, we got some bad news. We can't rely on the accuracy of the label to guarantee we're not wearing shatnez for four important reasons. Number one, by international law, less than 5% doesn't need to be listed on the label. You can have 96% wool, 4% linen. They could write 100%, no problem. A second reason you can't rely on the label is because we know that by law, they only have to write the main fabric. It never includes accessories, not the padding, not the stitching, not the interfacing. None of that has to be listed. It says exclusive of ornamentation. They don't even have to write it on a label. A third reason we can't rely on the label because we know that what happens is the companies who are importing, they want to save money. That's why they're in business. So whatever they can do to try to get away with, you know, saving money, they're going to try to do it. So for example, let's say a guy wanted to import 1,000 linen sweaters. Linen is an expensive type of material. You have to pay tax. Let's say you have to pay 10% tax on a linen sweater. So if he could save money, like, why not, right? Does anybody recognize this material here? The old timers would recognize it. Yeah, that's right again. What is that called? The pishtan, the flax of the esrog, right? In the olden days, they used to get, today they use these things, okay? But in the olden days, they used to get the shayla every sukkahs, right? Rabbi, I just bought for you sukkahs, I just bought myself a nice wool suit for yontif, and now, sukkahs morning, I came to shul, I started unwrapping my esrog, and what happened? So I started going like this, started unwrapping my esrog, and then what happens is, mitzvah baba vera! Is a problem? I'm wearing shayla, I'm getting shadis. I think I'm doing a mitzvah, I'm a big tzaddik, I'm wearing shadis. Is that a problem? So I tell him, so what does the pasuk say? Let's go back to the second pasuk. It says, lo silba shatnez, semro pishtim, yachtov. Yachtov has to be permanently attached, okay? Static electricity doesn't count, so there's no problem. So we don't have to worry about shatnez in that case. But there's another reason we don't have to worry about it, because when we say over here, what they were selling in the shuk of Araminim, they call it the flax or the pishtan. But that's not really the flax. That's the jute. It's the cousin, the look-alike of linen. Okay, it's the cheaper version of it. Okay, but now who could tell the difference between real linen and real jute over here? Okay, can anyone tell the difference between the two different materials over here? Almost impossible to tell the difference. So now let's go back to our importer. Why should the importer write on a label that he's bringing in 1,000 linen sweaters and pay 10% tax? I'll write on the label I'm bringing in rami or hemp and only pay 8% tax. You think anyone's going to catch me? So I'm not talking about third world countries that b'chlal, they don't have any ne'emonis. Jordan, anybody wants to? Mitzrayim, you want to trust them what they write on the label? How about North Korea? Anybody want to trust them? Okay. Okay, I'm talking about good old America that in 1939, they invented the concept of the Federal Trade Commission came up with the federal law, you have to label, the labeling act. So you have to figure out what's written on a label in order that there shouldn't be fraud. Okay, that was good. They had 50 inspectors to make sure that everything was, that there wasn't anything going wrong. Okay, that was good till 1985. During the Reagan administration, they made federal cutbacks, and they decided, why do we need 50 inspectors? So they cut it down to a skeleton crew of 3 inspectors. 300 million Americans and 3 inspectors! One for every 100 million people! Do you know what that means? Okay? Now, it's not like food. If you have a peanut gets mixed into the cornflakes, somebody's going to get an allergic reaction and die from it. Okay? There's nothing like that. I'm not talking about the health lovers or the simchonim or the tivonim that are going to make a big scandal about it. So I wrote on the label linen and it put cotton and it said cotton and it put linen. Who cares? No one's going to get sick. No one's going to die. No one's going to have any allergies. I just mixed up the linen instead of cotton. So what? So there's no mirsis. There's no fear factor. In the meantime, you just saved your company $2,000 because you wrote the other material. And you saved yourself. You don't have to pay taxes on the expensive one. I put rami because it's Chinese instead of real flax or linen. Okay? No one's going to catch me on that. So there's no mirsis factor. So how are we as religious consumers? That's where we're going to rely on the accuracy of labels? A fourth reason we can't rely on the labels is because since you have to pay taxes, you have to write the country of origin and what it's made out of in order to pay taxes. Everybody knows in shipping and handling, the labels fall off. And get banged around, they fall off. If it comes into the country, into the boat docks of Haifa, Ashdod, or Eilat, without anything, you get a knas, you're fined. So it doesn't have a label. I don't want to find. So every importer has a spare drawer of labels. So he tiptoes over to the drawer. He pulls out a label, snaps it into the garment, and then the inspector walks around and just writes down whatever he sees on the label. Who said that the garment matched that label? It has no connection whatsoever. Okay? So again, as kosher consumers, what are we going to do to guarantee we're not wearing shatnez? Okay, now we're not going to leave you hanging. Baruch Hashem, here comes the good news. We have an international network of shatnez laboratories. The headquarters is based in Lakewood, in New Jersey. I run the branch in Eretz Yisrael and Europe. The founder of our network is Mr. Joseph Rosenberger, my Rebbe. So I learned from him over 40 years ago. And Mr. Rosenberger is a very fascinating story. Just to say it very, very quickly, what happened was Mr. Rosenberger was, let's go back in history a little bit. What was the history of shatnez testing until Mr. Rosenberger came around? And so like this. So Moshe Rabbeinu told us you're not allowed to wear shatnez. So when people made their own clothes, they were careful not to make wool linen together. Then, fast forward to the 1600s, there was a Dayan Moshe from Vilna. That in the town of Vilna, he got together all the tailors, Goyish and Jewish tailors, and he said he gave him a little test. He wanted to see if they could tell the difference between linen and flax, or of jute, or one of the other, or is it the kosher jute, or is it the real flax together in a wool suit? So they gave him all kinds of tests. They could not tell the difference. He said, if you can't tell the difference between one of these other versions and this, so if that's the case, you can't buy, Paskin, you can't buy secondhand clothing unless you know the source that it came from a religious Jew who says that he gives a Eidach and Nema Bisurin and guarantees that there's no shatnez when he on the production line. Okay, said it. So that was a psak. That was good in Europe because most of the things in the shtetl was locally made anyways. You go into the backyard, you got your materials, you sewed it. The lady made the clothing. That was pretty simple. Now let's go fast forward to the Industrial Revolution in the 1800s already. Okay, after Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, so now things are being mass produced all over the place. So now what happens is, so now things are coming from all over. How are you going to know what's going on? And I don't know, even if you try to figure out who made it, you won't be able to figure it out. And then it's made by Goyish, it's from China or Far East or somewhere. You have no idea what's coming from. So what are we going to do? So that was like a real problem. So, okay, you can't buy from a peddler going from town to town unless you knew if it was a wool garment, you wouldn't be able to do it. That's why the Hasidim, some of the Hasidim, they wore silk jackets. They didn't want to take a chance of wool because they couldn't tell the difference if there was linen and what was going on. All right, that's what Jews did. That's how Jews kept the mitzvahs. All the way that happened until the 1941 when Mr. Rosenberger came on the scenes and he invented the first shatnez laboratory. What happened? So something very fascinating. Another priest of Hashkacha Pratis. Kadosh Baruch Hu always gives the refuah before the makkah. So what happened is, in 1937, right before the World War broke out, World War II, so the DuPont Chemical Company came up with new nylon threads. They were able to make synthetic threads. Okay, and they started trying it out. Oh, wow, look at this. It's made out of all kinds of synthetic material. It's made of plastic. Plastic is powder. You can mix it, no problem. So we can make threads now made out of synthetic materials. That's fascinating, beautiful. Okay, the winds of war started hovering over, and they saw that the American government saw that the war was imminent. It was going to happen at any time. And now we're going to have to send American soldiers overseas to Europe where there's cold weather. In the wintertime, it's hot in the summertime, and what are we going to do? I mean, they can't go with three suitcases, all right? And, with soldiers, you got the shirt on your back, and that's it. So there was a big interest in trying to textile science, trying to figure out what is the best type of material. I'll give you one soldier, one uniform made out of material that'll keep you warm, it'll keep you cool, it'll keep you washable, it'll keep you... So there was a big interest in textile science. Okay, so that happened right after they had the invention in 1937. So they started figuring out, ooh, maybe we could blend some of the natural stuff with some of the synthetic stuff and maybe make a new type of material that's very, you can wear it in all weather climates. So there was a big interest. So in order to do that, what could be blended with that? How much percentage of this and that? It generated a whole interest. Comes along our Mr. Rosenberger. His father owned a clothing store in Vienna. And he used to sell suits for Jewish people. So he was escaped during the war. He was in the concentration camp. So he got out, he escaped, and he was brought to America. In 1941, he came, and he saw a landsman. He said, Rabbi Yosef, Shalom Aleichem, I'm glad to see you're alive. Hey, tell me, you know what? In the Alte Heim back in Vienna, I used to rely on your father to buy suits. What do we do here in America, 1941? The suits are, I don't know who made the suits. What's with China's? I said, I don't know, that's a good question. All the refugees were looking, why Hashem kept me alive? What can I do? You know, what's my purpose of life? And he said, you know what? I'm going to try to investigate this. He put himself, he worked menial jobs during the day. He went to textile college at night. And he realized something fascinating. In 1941, they started, the last 3-4 years, there was a whole development of this textile science. And now using microscopes, it is possible to tell the difference. What Moshe Vilna, the dying Moshe from Vilna, couldn't tell the difference in the 1600s. Now Mr. Rosenberger, with the advent of microscopes, could tell the difference between this, you know, the jute or the rami or the hemp, and he could tell the difference. He said, if that's the case, you could buy a secondhand garment, inspect it by a Shatner's laboratory, and then we'll look under the microscope, we'll be able to tell you what it is. So he went around and tried, and went around from school to school, trying to inculcate the mitzvah of Shatner's. Like it was a revival, it was a base mitzvah, nobody knew how to makayim that mitzvah. But because of that, he was able to put it, it was good for New York, people would be able to bring him clothing. He just had to educate a whole generation. Now what happened was, in the early days, he based his system on the chazaka system. Since in the early days of America, there was the clothing unions were very strong, so they were very regulated. So in order to give the cotton growers a fair advantage, they imported foreign materials. So something came over from China, like silk or whatever, it was very expensive, or linen, it doesn't grow in America. So anything was coming over was expensive. So he said, if you have a jacket, and it says on the label, the amalgamated clothing union workers, and you checked in a few strategic places, like the collar, the arm, we said before, the pockets, the button, a few strategic places where they might use linen, and it was had the union label, and it was pretty cheap. It's very unlikely that they were going to have linen, because linen is imported, it's taxed, and it's very expensive. So that was true. So he used to go around. That was mostly applied to men's clothing. And ladies' clothing usually had the American amalgamated union label. So they were fine. So men's clothing needed checking because the suits came from overseas. The ladies' stuff was produced locally. And it usually didn't have a problem. He went around to educating all the Beis Yaakov girls at the time. And there came an idea. Men's suits need checking. Ladies' stuff doesn't need checking. That was in the 1940s and 50s and 60s. What happened is those girls later become teachers of the Beis Yaakov, and they're still walking around today with that myth, thinking that, oh, ladies' clothing doesn't need checking. It's probably okay. Only men's suits need checking. It's not true anymore. Besides that, tax laws change. Today you have a global marketplace. It's cheaper today to take an American garment, send it to China, have it sent back to America because you have the cheap labor, than it is to produce in America. And once you open up the gates to foreign products, they're going to use their products. So they're going to write, American made. Yeah, the fabric was made in America. All the internal components came from China. And then it comes back. You have the cheap labor. So today you don't have any of these chazakas anymore. So Mr. Rosenberger's sample taking system, it worked well in 40s and 50s and 60s. All right. I myself was a sample taker. Okay, Moshe could verify in Israel, in Baltimore. I was a sample taker in Baltimore. So we tested based on the chazaka system. The system changed. It's not, you can't do that anymore. Today, the actual fabric itself, you can take out a snip. Well, some of the old timers remember, if you had a snip out of your collar, that was assuming that was checked. Because they used to send it in by mail, and then he would look under the microscope, he would see what it was. Today, you could be staring the fabric in the face, and the sample taker, he's not a textile expert. He doesn't know what he's looking at. The thread right next to the piece that he said would be the problem. Okay, the button thread, the button pops off, but the piece right next to the thread, that was the problem. You don't know how to pull it out. Today's the textile science is very, very complicated. So you need to be a trained expert in order to be able to do it. So based on all of this, Mr. Rosenberger, I learned by him over 40 years ago. But Baruch Hashem, we have now the international network. He appointed Rabbi Yoel Shachet from Lakewood, who was in charge of research and development. And we started learning and learning, and now we have the new upgraded system of what's really going on in the textile world. Just to give you an example of what level of scientific knowledge we had a guy from Lakewood, who Rabbi Shakin and one of his partners, associates, they made an appointment to go to McCrone Institute in Chicago. McCrone Institute is the world's leading forensic textile school in the world. All right, so they made an appointment with Mr. McCrone, who was a goy. And so these two yeshiva boys from Lakewood, they went to them an appointment, and they wanted to discuss about different textiles. And Mr. McCrone was very impressed. He said, "Wow, you know, you guys really know what you're doing." He said, "Well, yeah, we have a laboratory. We test for the presence of wool and linen." And he said, "That's fascinating. You know, that we would like to ask you a couple of questions, if you don't mind." "Sure. What would you like to ask?" So he said, they asked a few questions, but the main question they asked was, "Can you please tell me the difference between linen or flax and rami, the Chinese linen? Okay, can you tell us the difference, you know, or the forensics, what's the difference?" Mr. McCrone looked at the two yeshiva bachurim and he said, "I want to tell you something. There hasn't been a stone unturned in the whole world of textiles that I haven't done, except for the question that you just asked me. That is exactly the thing that I'm working on right now." And he was so impressed that the yeshiva guys should know this. He said he gave him a graduate scholarship to join them in the Crone Institution. And we had an FBI agent, a guy from Scotland Yard, and a guy from Lakewood in the same class. Okay, so that's the level of proficiency now. I learned from them. Okay, so that's the type of textile, the type of level that we're working on with our thing. And we're using the science and technology, we're able to get it down to a science. And today, Baruch Hashem, like I said, we have over 300 testers in 120 cities worldwide. And Baruch Hashem, we have it down to a science. So by following four simple rules, we're going to catch 99% of the shatnez that's out there today. All right? Now, before I give you the rules, let me tell you the exception to the rules. Men's suits, you always have to check, we said, because of the internal components and the shoulder pads and stuff, you always have to check men's suit jackets. And men's and ladies' and kids' wool coats. Those always need checking because the internal components. Besides that, okay, there's four simple rules. If we follow the four rules, okay, we're going to catch 99% of the shatnez. And this is the most important part of the shiur. Remember the four rules. Before I get to the rules, let me explain how the rules work, though. It's going to be similar for checking food for bugs. You can have three different categories. We have, for example, if you have rice. We know rice is sometimes infested, so you must check the pot of rice. Okay? Something to rice, so you may need a bug. So the rabbanan said you have to check it. That's when something is commonly infested. Similarly, by clothing, if it's a type of brand which is commonly infested with shatnez, for example, Hugo Boss suits, 90% shatnez. So you must check those. You have to check that. All right? If it's a type of brand, like an expensive Italian or German suit, like Canali Brioni's, you know, James Bond style, all right, 100% shatnez. Those are always shatnez in the collar, all right? There's an Indian not to even try those on because they're muksuk shatnez. They're almost vadai shatnez. You shouldn't even try them on in the store because it's like, if you have two of them, say, that, don't put it on. So it's a muksuk, it's almost like shatnez, all right? The question was, Dr. Callis asked me before, thank you for bringing me here. It was in his list that I got here tonight. He asked me about, what about if you go to an American store? You go to JCPenney's or Sears or things like that. Cheaper regular American brands. Those you could try on for size. You still have Rove suits are going to be fine. Just if you could try it on for size. If you're trying on the pants, though, don't come out of the dressing room. Stay in the dressing room. If you want to have somebody, have them come inside. You don't want to have a psik resha that for sure could be nene. To walk around outside without a suit jacket, no problem. To walk around outside of the dressing room without pants, you're going to be embarrassed. So it's a psik resha, you definitely be nene from the wearing the garment. So on the suffix, don't just bring the other person in if they want to just say it, okay? But if it's just a shirt or suit jacket, that you can walk outside. You're not mechavin for nahana, you're just trying it on for size, that's fine. If it's one of the brands that are 50% and up, so like brand, like I just mentioned some of them, the expensive Italian or German stuff. So those are, or the Hugo Bosses, those are known to contain shatnez. That'll be the category of called mukzuk shatnez, similar like bugs. The middle category is called miut hamotsui. It's less than 50%. It's sometimes there's shatnez. Similarly, by bugs, you would have sometimes a worm in an apple. We all heard a case of there's a brown hole, a brown mushy spot or a hole. Don't bite into it. The rabbi said, cut it open and inspect it before you bite into it. Safek d'oraisa, to eat a bug, check it beforehand. Similarly, the four rules that I'm about to give you, that's the things that require shatnez testing. It's less than 50%, but it's common. It's not rare. So those are the categories with the four things that I'm about to tell you. That'll make it miut hamotzui. Okay? If it's not one of the four rules I'm about to give you, it's the third category. It's ein hamotzui klal, and it's very rare to have shatnez. Those things you can wear, no problem. Like I said, the cotton pajamas and white T-shirts and cotton shirts and all kinds of things, undergarments. You don't have to worry about that. Those are all miut ein hamotzui klal. Those do not require inspection. An apple, a banana, you don't have to worry about, no, sorry, a banana, a watermelon, you don't have to worry about those. They're ein hamotzui klal bugs, so you could just eat them. Similarly, by the cotton shirts or 100% polyester acrylic sweaters, polyester pants, you don't have to worry about it. You could just wear them as is. So if you don't get anything else, remember the four rules. Here are the four rules. And here we go, okay? Rule number one, we read the label. We do not rely on the label, but it's an indication. Once they have an indication, we give these four things in for inspection. Number one, if it says on the label wool, any percentage, can't rely on percentages. If it says any percentage, we give it into the laboratory, make sure there's no linen. Rule number two, if it says flax or linen, so they're telling you there's linen, we have to check, make sure there's no wool. Rule number three, if it says other fibers, abbreviated OF or MF, mixed fibers, or diverse fibers, AF or D or DF, if they're telling you there's mixed fibers, what are those fibers? So you should check them as well. All that is the first three rules, that is what it says on the label. Okay, Torah Shebichtav. The fourth rule is, put a little star next to it, an asterisk. It says, ignore what it says on the label. If it has a linen look fabric. How do you identify linen look? Number one, linen is the natural beige color of linen. It also has, if you hold it up to the light, a linen look will have an irregular weave. It'll be thick and thin. One thread will be thicker, one is thinner. Every 5 or 10, one is thicker or other. Okay, I'll pass some of these around if you want. Okay, and you could actually, you'll see some of these yourself. I can take that, please. Pass them around. Okay, and if you want to come get this, I'll... So hold it up to the light, and you can actually see every 5 or 10 threads, one is thicker than the other. This is called linen look material. Also, if it has little white dots in the fabric, so those little white dots might be linen, an irregular weave. Any one of these, or if it's multicolored, there's no way they're going to list every single color on the ingredients in the label. So any one of these things, if it's wool, linen, other fibers, or linen look fabric, those are the things that should be inspected. Now, by following these four rules, we're going to catch 99% of the shatnez. The rare event that it's going to contain, be mislabeled, also wool, also linen, that's one in a million, okay? That's me chain of mitzvah. We don't have to worry about that. It's like maybe open your mouth, maybe a bug will fly in. We don't have to worry about that. Hashem was give us the Torah to be normal, okay? Lonin the Torah l'machi yasharis, we don't have to worry about rare events. But we have to do by following these rules, which is in everybody's ability, we're going to catch 99% of the shatnez that's out there. And then by now, we're going to have the last part of the shiur is the most interesting. We're going to have show and tell.
This is Marv now. At 10:15, but...
We can continue. If there's enough people here... Okay, if there's enough people, one, we can make a Marv here also.
Can make a Marv here.
Okay. All right, so now by following the rules, we're gonna show and tell how we're gonna catch most of the shatnez that's out there.
This is not on men's jackets.
Men's suits always need checking. Men's and ladies and kids wool winter coats, you always need suit. You always need checking. Besides that, all the other types of material, sweaters and pants.
Even if it doesn't say well.
Right, men's suits is not one of the four rules. We said you always need to check the men's suits because of the internal component. Besides that, for sweaters and pants and all. These are the four rules. Here are the four rules. All right, we said wool, linen, other fibers, and linen look. If it's not one of those rules, it'll fall into the third category of ein hamotzui klal, and you can wear them without any problem. You don't have to have them inspected whatsoever. All right, so let's see now how by following these rules, we're going to catch most of the shatnez that's out there. Okay, so this is the most interesting part now. All right, so rule number one, if it says wool, again, we read the label, we don't rely on the label, but if it says wool, we check to make sure there's no linen. So here is a a nice gray skirt from Meir Sharon, okay? Now, people assume falsely that everything in Meir Sharon must be kosher, right? They would never sell shabbos in Meir Sharon. Okay, so because of that, nobody bothers checking. But there was one girl who decided to be machmir. So what happened? She brought in a nice tzanua gray skirt, and sure enough, the pockets were made out of a linen blend. But that's just a pocket. It's ornamentation. They don't have to write that on the label. But because she was machmir, she was the one machmir on herself. But we caught the shatnez over here. Okay, that was case number one. So it said wool. Checked it. We found the linen. Okay, what was rule number two? Thank you. Rule number two. It says linen or flax. So here we have a sweater that's from the company of Gulf. Okay, very international popular brand. It says 100% linen. Okay, this one, there's no shoulder pads, no anything here, but it's 100% linen. Like, what could be the problem? The embroidery was a wool blend. They don't have to write that. That's ornamentation. They don't have to write that on the label. It comes in green, by the way, also. Okay, so, so I went to the store, and I said, "Hi, I'm Rabbi Gerwitz from the Shatnez Lab. This one has Shatnez." So they looked at me and they said, "Excuse me, sir, you think we only sell to Jews? We sell to tourists and to Arabs also." I said, "Okay, I'm going to the press." "Oh, okay, we'll give you back your money." Okay, that was the reaction. Okay, said, okay, so Baruch Hashem, it said linen, and we caught, it was 100% linen, and no shoulder pads, but orientation, we caught the shatnez. All right, rule number two. Okay, from there, we'll move over to England, where this one was over here. This lady purchased a two-piece suit, nice jacket, had a matching skirt to it. And she bought it in England, she brought it to Eretz Yisrael, and I took a look at the label, and it says on the label, in English, linen and wool, right on the label. Okay, right, okay. Okay, so there it is. I mean, mamish, the material itself, you can't really fix it. So in my Shatnez lab, in the Rav Shefa shopping mall in Yerushalayim, so I used to have the storefront, I had three mannequins. I had a papa mannequin, a mama mannequin, and the baby mannequin. So I dressed the mama mannequin in this one, I found another one, the kids, the whole family is wearing shatnez together. Right? Anyways, people would be walking past and they would say, "Oh, how much does that cost?" They said, "It's not for sale." They said, "It's shatnez." They said, "Oh, okay, it's beautiful. How much does it cost?" "No, it's not for sale, it's shatnez." So they thought shatnez is like the name of the style. They don't even know what shatnez is. So I said, "No, it's like shatnez. I'm just showing an example of what shatnez is." All right. So, okay. So from there, we can go out to Gush Etzion, where some lady was wearing this monstrosity over here. Okay. And this one, it said on the label over here, it says cotton. All right. Now, we said according to the four rules, if it's cotton, it shouldn't be a problem, right? Okay, but what happened is when you hear the requirements for shatnez testing, so all of a sudden people think, I might have a lot of stuff that needs testing. How am I going to schlep everything to the laboratory? So a number of years ago, I started the service that we do shatnez home visits. So instead of schlepping everything to the lab, so I come with a portable microscope and the tools, and we sit in a person's home for a couple hours. We go through all the wardrobe, closet by closet, shelf by shelf. We just pull out the customer, they read the labels beforehand. You have to, first thing is read the labels. See what it says. If it says wool linen, okay, obviously, don't buy it. Right? But if it's the other things, then if it says wool or linen, they bring it to the table. We know those are going to for sure need checking. Besides that, there might be things that you might not catch, but we'll be able to pull them out. And in a few hours, we usually go through a whole household. All right, anyways, we did a whole house visit, one of our testers, and we came across this material here. And we hold this up, and it said, this one feels a little itchy. And this one, the pink one, if you hold it up to the light, oh, look at that one, it's irregular. It has like little, slubs or bumps coming out of the material. So this is a wool blend, and this is a linen blend. So the fabric here is shatnez. So that's what's going on over here. So why does it say cotton? The boy side. Cotton is the name of the store. There's a chain store in Israel called Cotton. It has 8 branches around in the country. Okay, that's what they wrote on the label over here. But the material is shatnez, all right? But Baruch Hashem, because of the house call, we call it the shatnez.
That's unbelievable.
Okay. Here we have a linen sweater. Okay, there's nothing in it. It doesn't have any embroidery. There's absolutely nothing. What could be the problem over here? But the overlock stitch, for some reason, is made out of wool. Just the overlock, the pink overlock on a pink sweater. That's why you have to check. Even if a linen, 100% linen without padding, without anything, could still have shatnez. All right, so we still have to check it. We caught the Shabbos. All right, now from there, now just like there's a halakha, you're not allowed to feed a baby non-kosher food. Mistafa biyadayim, it's also to feed a baby non-kosher stuff. You can't dress a baby in shatnez either. Right? So even kids' clothing requires inspection. So this one is an Israeli company. It says on the label, acrylic, which is polyester, synthetic, and wool. Once it says, I don't care percentages. Once it says wool, you have to check it. So this one came to the lab. I pull out from hidden spots all the different materials, all the different colors. I checked each one of them. Everything was fine. I didn't find any shatnez over here, except the Israeli company wanted to advertise themselves, so I printed a nice linen label with the name of the company sewn right into the side of the suit, the sweater. Okay, so they made it shatnez. All right, so so you could theoretically pull this out, but this one, it would kill the blue overlock, so it would ruin it. So she donated it here to the Shatnez Hall of Fame. So there we go, that's why I have this one. The other one, the second sweater, was able to fix it and just sew it up. This one, she donated over here, so for samples. Okay, so that was one case over here. Now this one is a little boy's vest over here, and it says on the label, the first thing is read the label, always read the label. It says on the label here, cotton and linen. This one the company got right, from here to here. They just forgot to tell you about the wool polyester holding it together in the back. That's the part, the beauty of this is this part over here. That's what they wrote on the label. This is just haphazard. Anyway, they go around the world giving this lecture, and one day, and I show everybody this sample of shatnez. I currently live in Baia Vagan, but I used to live in Har Nof for 20 years, and I was walking one Shabbos morning, I was walking down the block, and I see a 10-year-old kid wearing this vest. I say to him, "Hi, Rabbi Gurwitz from the shatnez lab. Let's go speak to your father." So he goes home, and he said, my father's sleeping. So he said, "Well, it's shatnez, it's muksa. Take it off, don't wear it." So 10-year-old kid, I thought, you'd understand, Seder. A year later, I walk down the block, I see the same kid wearing the same vest. I said, "Hi, Rabbi Gurwitz, let's speak to your mother this time." All right, so we knock on the door Shabbos morning, his mother opens the door, and I said, "Listen, lady, last night we sang to you, Eish Eschayil Mimsa, Darshat Semiru Pishtim." Okay, if you want to be an Eish Eschayil, it's not enough that your kitchen ingredients are good. You also have to make sure your kid's wardrobe is not shatnez. The kid didn't give you the message for a year. He's walking around wearing shatnez. So if you want to be an Eish Eschayil, make sure you check for shatnez. Okay. Okay, this one over here, notice again here, little junior is wearing this one over here. The sleeves are cotton, no problem. But what do we notice? The actual fabric itself. The little white dots or slubs. So when you see the slubs coming out, that red light should go off in our head. Linen look. All right, whenever you have the linen look fabric, sure enough, this material is a wool linen blend. The sleeves are cotton, they were fine, but the material itself is shatnez, and we caught it, Baruch Hashem, because of the linen look, only because of rule number four. Okay, let's move on a little bit further. And I was in Manchester giving a shiur to Shiva High School. And we pulled this one out from Mango, and also a popular brand. And I was showing it to everybody. It says in the label over here that's a wool sweater. The brown is wool. And look at the sleeves, little white dots running through the thing over there. And the little tiny letters, it says that the sleeves are made with a linen blend also. It's one material, it's one garment, so it's shatnez. I'm holding it up for everybody to see. There's a Rebbe in the back row going, I said, "What's the matter?" He said, "My wife has that sweater." Okay, so Baruch Hashem, okay, we caught the shatnez, and that guy's wife also caught her shatnez. Baruch Hashem. All right, now, we know every mitzvah of the Torah has certain zgula to it. Okay, eating non-kosher food, unfortunately, is matam temes nefesh. Okay, a person, we try to do the right thing, all of a sudden you eat non-kosher food, it somehow distorts our potential for Kedusha. It's like you have pipes going from the Shemayim to the person's neshama, and if you eat non-kosher food, it gets stuffed up, the pipes get stuffed up, and the Kedusha just doesn't come down, the flow of Siyat Deshmai doesn't come down. Well, that's why by non-kosher food. Chazal tell us, nothing blocks the prayers from going up to Shemayim like the wearing of shatnez. So it's not only is it Issa D'Oraisa, we have to be careful that we're not wearing shatnez for, we want to see out the Shemaya, we have to be careful about that as well. So it blocks prayers from being answered. So now I had a Hasidisha Rebbetzin, she asked me to do a home visit for her. So I came and she said, "Fine." I come to her home, she gives me an introduction. She said, "Rabbi, you're probably not going to find shatnez in my home because I bought everything in Borough Park. But just to be on the safe side, Bavakasha." So we went through closet by closet, shelf by shelf. She had a wool sweater. It said wool on it. So she starts reading the labels now. And it said on the label, wool, cotton, and linen, right on the label. But she bought it in Borough Park. She didn't bother checking the label. So, okay, Baruch Hashem, we caught the shotness. Now, she told me what happened was that this particular sweater, she wore it one time. She wasn't careful, and she wore it. Unfortunately, she was nipshal. But afterwards, she gave it in for dry cleaning, who did her a favor and burnt a hole in the neck, in the shoulder. Okay, so she couldn't wear it, so she put it out of commission. I found it laying on the side. Okay, so look what happened. I'm unbelievable, Siyat Deshmaya. Because she wasn't careful in shatnez, because Baruch Hu caused it to be nixal one time. But Zil Rebetzin, she had Siyat Deshmaya, her prayer should be answered. He saw a seeming accident occurred in order to be able to take that garment out of commission. So yes, Siyat Deshmaya, that should catch it. Okay, that's a nice story for Hasidus Rebetzins. Okay, we had an American seminary girl who came here a few years ago. After the lecture, so I do the testing in the school, they all run back to the dormitory and they start bringing me the four rules, wool, linen, other fibers, linen, look. So she had a wool skirt that had a gold pinstripe in it. Okay, so I said, okay, wool, and it has other fibers. It said 1% other fibers. What's that other fibers? Doesn't know, doesn't say. So sure enough, I looked in the microscope, the gold pinstripe, which is just a little tiny piece, like a pinstripe, is only a small, it was 1% of the whole garment, that was linen. So we caught the shot in his Baruch Hashem. So I asked her, do you have any interesting stories about this garment? She said, I don't think so. Oh, you know what?